No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. And if you have a question for our guest, we have an amazing guest tonight, you can call in at 888-627-6008. And tonight we have Joe Trippi, who the New Republic called the man who reinvented campaigning. He's worked for, I'm excited to have him, not only because he now works with the Lincoln Project, among other things, but also because he's worked for every Democrat, Ted Kennedy, Walter Mondale, Howard Dean, Doug Jones, Jerry Brown. I mean, if there's a person out there that understands the Democratic Party more than Joe Trippi, I don't know who it is. So thank you so much for being on the show, Joe. I hope I can call you Joe. And yeah. Thanks so much,
Senator,
for being on the show.
Senator, it's great to be on with you.
Great, thanks. Let me start. I don't want to dwell on this subject because every podcast and every talk show in America talks about this. But I want to start with a simple question. When Trump was elected, I was asked to talk to a bunch of women about what had just happened. They were very upset, and I did. And at the end of my little discussion, I think that one of the women in the audience took exception to what I was saying, and she stood up and she said, as Democrats, we have nothing to apologize for. And my response to that is, what are you, crazy? The man got elected because they didn't like our candidate and they don't like our policies. So what do you think? Was I right? Do we have, are we responsible as much as anybody for the election of Donald Trump?
I don't think we're responsible as much as anybody. I mean, I do think that, you know, it's clear that there are a lot of people who felt abandoned by the Democratic Party.
You know,
whether they were or not doesn't really matter. They felt right. That way. We weren't really communicating very well with them. Focused on other issues and things. By the way, all good issues, but you know, not ones that that were inclusive to enough voters out there. And there was a lot of resentment going on. And look, you know, when that happens, people are gonna blame somebody unless you are communicating to them and talking to them. And I think that's where we had a blind spot where we really were not. And we still don't really communicate what we've done for people, for working folks. And we get caught up in a lot of the culture war stuff that the Republicans and the right bait us with because of our values. And we don't communicate. We fight over things that without, you know, Doug Jones got this in Alabama in 2017 and kept insisting that we address kitchen table issues. I mean, issues that are really impacting people who are just trying to make ends meet and make sure that they understood that we were focused like a laser beam on that, not on a lot of the stuff Trump was trying to, you know, Trump and the Republicans, are about stoking fear. And sometimes we play into that. And so I just think it's a difficult question. And the Democratic Party has a lot of different wings and is pretty diverse, and we argue over things. And so, you know, unlike the Republican Party, which has really become sort of an autocratic, almost white nationalist party, if not, maybe the word almost shouldn't come be in there, but it's a hell of a lot easier to effectively communicate that message when you've got that coherent a group and not very diverse group that forms your base. The Democratic Party is a much bigger tent, and it's harder to get everybody rallying around one idea or another. And also, you have different wings, and so I just think we're not as good at communicating, and they're very good at stoking fear, and there are a lot and resentment. And yes, we ignored that resentment and didn't address it. And so, for too long, I think. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's it. But I would argue with, you know, we're as responsible as the people that are like Trump, stoking racist tropes, stoking fear of the other, of fear of immigrants, homophobia, Ron DeSantis, he's stoking that stuff. And not just him, but the entire Republican Party won't even challenge people who say these things anymore. And so in that sense, I don't think we're as responsible. It's more if anything, the last responsible party, major party left in America, the only pro-democracy party left in America, because the Republican Party is clearly autocratic and dedicated to dear leader, not to democracy.
Well, the thing you say about the diversity is interesting, because we always say that, right? We say Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. And that's pretty much always right. The case, right? It doesn't matter who they nominate. It's different with us. I've been to 12 conventions in a row, and I was at the last one, last live one, where people were still shouting Bernie, 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 while we were trying to nominate Hillary. And, as Will Rogers said, I belong to no organized political movement. I'm a Democrat. So all right. of that is true. And, you know, one interesting thing that I think you said is that we've lost touch with our constituency. You know, I often say I was born a Democrat because I'm a former Teamster. I lost my parents when I was a teenager. I was an orphan. I was a high school dropout. I got in trouble, got my life back together, and climbed up the ladder. But, I always said I was born a Democrat because these were the values. And working class people were the backbone of the Democratic Party. And somehow we've lost them to the effect of a multi-billionaire who's never worked a day in his life. I don't understand how he's convinced these people that he understands their pain. But I think you're right. He stoked this horrible, all the things that are worst about us, racism, homophobia, and we are, I think, better people for not doing that. So let's talk for a moment about the only thing that I think that I see on the horizon that holds great hope, because we've all agreed to this system we call democracy. So we need to accept, I don't care whether we call them rednecks or working people, or whatever, we need to figure out a way to work with them to make the system work. And you're involved with a thing called the Lincoln Project. And for those people that don't know, it was started by George Conway and a handful of people. Maybe you were one of the people that started it. And it seeks to bring bipartisanism back into our lives. So let's talk about that a little bit. Tell us what you're doing and how
the Lincoln Project. I wasn't a founder. I joined a few years ago, but I was not a founder back in the early founders back in 2016. That was all. It was founded by a whole host of former Republicans, basically people who are so appalled about Trump, who were Republicans who believed that he was destroying the party and that Trump needed to be opposed at all costs. I mean, by every means necessary and stopped. That particularly post his win, that he could, that he had to be challenged at every turn, and later, obviously, once he was defeated in 2020, and I think the Lincoln Project was a big player in convincing other Republicans who were appalled with what was happening in the party. I'm talking rank and file. Enough of them to vote for Joe Biden and vote for Democrats in 2020 was a big part of that. Reed Galen, Rick Wilson, Stuart Stevens. I mean, these are all guys who had run presidential campaigns. Stuart Stevens was Romney's top strategist, for example. So they left that, and to their credit, they were all people who would have made millions of dollars making TV ads for these Republicans who are, these crazy Republicans that are running for this, like Herschel Walker. And they would have been, if they had just stayed in the party, they would have made millions doing Dr. Oz and Herschel Walker. They walked away from that and said no. And basically walked away from their careers in the Republican Party to oppose Trump. And I think right now in 2024, I still think the Lincoln Project, the reason I joined was because I thought they were so damn aggressive and their messaging was powerful and really put, Trump off balance, put his campaign off balance, moved enough Republicans, to consider Biden and the rest of the Democratic, Democrats for Senate and House, including in 2022. When the red wave never materialized, I think the Lincoln Project was part of that, and their messaging was part of that. Now, in 2024, well, so I joined because of that. That they were just, I think, messaged better than Democrats at convincing people, what's at stake here. And I thought, look, this thing. We're no longer in a fight between two parties. This isn't Republicans versus Democrats. It's not even an ideological fight between everybody. Say, oh, the conservatives are doing it. It's not a conservative versus liberal ideological fight. This is literally a fight for democracy. It's Donald Trump versus democracy itself, and people need to wake up to that fact. I mean, wings of the party, of all parties, this is Republicans, Democrats, Independents. We need to understand that there is a real threat. January 6th was just the beginning of their attempt to take the government over by any means necessary. And they are doing the same thing now for Trump, and as somebody wrote, I can't remember, there's a good column about this, that they're working in the state legislatures to change the rules so that the coup this time will be by legal briefs. If a state declares that the election wasn't held properly, and the legislature now has the power to declare who the slate of electoral college is in the state, which is they can replace the elected slate and say, and name their own slate. And that is the one that that Congress would have to confirm. Well, we saw on January 6th, 162 of them voted against, the slate in Arizona, for instance, the legitimate electors, with the new laws that they're passing in these states, now they have the majority of the House currently, and that majority is it's a MAGA, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene runs the House of Representatives. She has, you know, McCarthy walking around on her leash. So, as does Trump, by the way. So there's no way that we aren't threatened. You know, this is an existential threat to our democracy. And I think the mistake we all make, first of all, everybody has this normalcy bias where, hell, well, Trump's defeated. You know, now we can go back to normal. Or you know, now that he's been indicted, everything will go back to normal. You know, there's no way if he's indicted he could possibly win. Wrong, wrong, wrong. It's been ever since he came down that escalator and started to stoke this resentment, this hatred of the other, come up with new ways to make people to the point now where you all of us have stopped talking to people on the other side. The other side stopped talking to us because we hold each other in such contempt and are sure the other side's so evil and that we're the demon, you know, Satan worshipers on the left. That's him stoking that. And the rest of, unlike in the past when there was a David Duke or a George Wallace, there were, or even and Nixon, it's not unfair to Nixon to compare him to Trump, but he was in considerable trouble in Watergate. There were leaders in the parties that stood up and said, no, you know, to Nixon, resign, or you're not just going to be impeached. You're going to be convicted. No, we have a whole party that isn't so afraid to do that or so bought in, that they're now part of the coup and are still working for the coup that they intend to impose on the American people in 2024. Through, even though they'll lose the popular vote, Biden will cream them in the popular vote, as we've done in 7 out of the last 8 presidential elections, I think. They now are so entangled in legal stuff that they're doing, laws are changing, and Trump is still out there stoking this. And now you have Robert Kennedy Jr. Oh, boy, yeah. There's an accident. Yeah. Deciding he's going to go in and wait till the dark money comes in to fund his attacks against Biden, to weaken Biden some more. Then you got Cornel West and Jill Stein running she's running Cornell's campaign as in the Green Party. And then you have No Labels with $70 million trying to entice a moderate centrist ticket. Third-party ticket to also join this, to siphon off moderate centrist votes, including moderate centrist Republican votes, with pull them away from Biden. These are all people, groups in the past that voted for, you know, between Trump and Biden, voted for Biden in 2020. But this is not all an accident. This is a well-funded attempt to defeat Biden, put Trump back in office, and then continue with everything that you've seen the state legislatures doing, banning abortion bans. I don't need to start listing them all for you. We all know the appalling things that DeSantis and other Republicans who control states have been doing.
Well, you know, you bring up the point of democracy, and I can't agree with you more. This is a fight for democracy. But they just did a poll last week that shows 49% of the Americans polled don't believe democracy is working. And this is a real problem for us. And I can't disagree with any word with anything you just said. And in fact, as an old campaigner myself, I look at these guys and I don't understand it. I don't understand why Mike Pence wants to get the nomination and then says that Donald Trump's not done anything wrong. You know, I don't understand that strategy. Why there was such a grip of this man that, you know, on the surface they want to beat him, but they don't know how. Let me ask you something, though. I'm a basketball fan, and we don't seem to have a very deep bench. When I think of the people that the Republicans have that could run instead of Trump, not DeSantis, but the former governor of Ohio, the former governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, there are several Republicans that I can think of off the top of my head that would be suitable candidates. It's harder for me to think about Democrats that fall into that category. Do we have some good Democrats in the wings?
I think we have a great bench. I mean, you have Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, mm-hmm. Newsom in California. Kamala, Mayor Pete. There are lots of great, Democrats out there that are doing incredible jobs in these states. Wes Moore, the new governor of Maryland, I think is just an incredible leader who is on our great future in front of him. The other thing I kind of disagree with is, there's a reason the people that you cite that would be acceptable, Larry Hogan, Ohio, you know, et cetera, are not running because they couldn't possibly beat, beat Trump with first, just because of the large number of people that are running. So this is the interesting thing. You have, first of all, there's no, I don't know if any incumbent president of the United States who has been as successful as Joe Biden in the first 2 years. The jobs numbers, we had inflation because of supply chain and other issues, and the Russian invasion of Ukraine, rising prices, gas prices in particular. But those inflation is coming down really quickly. Wages are going up. Manufacturing jobs are hitting record numbers as manufacturing comes back to the United States, which, by the way, is one of the things that people that we lost were very resentful of those jobs, right, and, leaving due to globalization and other policies. That's all turning fast. And it's, the infrastructure bill everybody screaming that, this recession's coming. The Fed's going to create a recession. It's like the big red wave that turned into a red mirage. And everybody said, what red wave? It never happened. The same thing with the recession. It now looks like this economy in Bidenomics is driving it, is working. So, and that we're not likely to have a recession before this election. If anything, the economy, the markets, everything are all rising. So, one, why in the hell would a president with that record say, no, I'm not going to run for re-election, I'm not going to keep this going?
Oh, no,
of course they are. I don't care what their age is or what party they're in. Joe Biden has a right to win, to run again, given what he's accomplished. Then you look at that and you look at, it's like Joe Manchin. If you care about democracy and the threat, you don't run in a third party to pull, like, who? Yeah. Joe Manchin and Larry Hogan running on a unity ticket. They're gonna steal moderate votes away from Donald Trump. You got to be kidding me! Larry Hogan isn't running in the primary against Trump because he knows there's no such thing. He can't steal any votes from Trump. Okay, but you're gonna run to, you know, in this unity no labels ticket. Well, if you can't take moderate vote, if you and everybody listening to this show understands how preposterous it would be to think you could take moderate votes away from Trump, that's preposterous. First of all, there are no moderates supporting Trump, okay? Anybody who would put themselves in that category doesn't support Trump. Ergo, if you run a third party that's aimed at being moderate and centrist, there's only one person running that you could take votes away from. And who would that be? Oh, the Democrats. Mm-hmm. But Manchin, Joe, you're a Democrat. Why not run in West Virginia as a U.S., you know, for your U.S. Senate seat and try to hold that? Because first of all, if they take the Senate and they have the House, and you help them by running as this moderate unity ticket that only helps Donald Trump get back in the White House by doing, this is like the exact opposite of what these people should be doing. And so, part of it, yes, there's, you know, I would be a great president. Wonderful. I've worked for a whole bunch of people who thought that, some won, some didn't. But yeah, there's 16 or 17 come out of the woodwork every 4 years thinking that. Yep. This is not the year to do this. This is the year where Democrats, independents, Republicans, if you care about democracy, you've got to rally around the only pro-democracy party in America. It's the Democrats. And then we can start fighting. If we win this one and we finally kick Trump to the curb, or he's in jail afterwards, because I doubt that'll happen between now and then, or found guilty at least, if not serving time. After that, we can start arguing about what we actually, you know, if we want to start arguing about real reforms, we should and must, and we have to get to what you're talking about. But I think Biden's already doing a lot of addressing some of the resentment that was out there with CHIPS Act and other things that are creating real opportunity and jobs for people that rightfully were resentful for being ignored. Well, Biden isn't doing that, if anything but. So I just think this is we've got. Really innovative leaders out there who are leading at the state level. Like I said, Gretchen Whitmer, Westmore, Newsom, there's several others and lots of, stellar members of Congress, and some really good candidates that are going to be out there in the Senate, this time. I actually think we have if we can unify and stay strong here, and understand who the enemy is and what, and the enemy is autocracy and Trump. Then we have a real opportunity. And part of that too, Senator, is that I think the one thing that gives me a lot of, positiveness about the 2024 election is the way it's unlikely for Republicans to be able to unify around whoever gets their nomination. For example, I think Trump, these indictments, and as hard as DeSantis has pushed to be even more extreme than Trump on some of the you know, MAGA cult issues, in the hope he's trying to pick up MAGA voters. It's not working, but he's moving it harder and to the more extreme. That's creating, I think, and the Trump and the indictments of Trump are creating, a situation where Trump is stronger in the primary for the nomination, but much, much weaker in a general election as even more Republicans and moderates, realize the real danger and and the line he's crossed. I don't see Trump. If we don't have no labels, if we don't have all these third party crazy, this is a crazy time to run a third party. And there are at least a couple in the wings working on it. But if we can ignore that or drive those votes away from those parties, hold people together, I don't think Trump has never gotten over 46% of the vote. It's actually kind of amazing for Larry Hogan. He's not running because there's too many people in the Republican primary, and therefore, and there aren't enough moderate votes, and therefore, if just more of them get in, it guarantees Trump winning. You understand that, then you would think you would understand that. Why wouldn't that be the same case in a general election? In other words, you know, let's give people more choice. Let's have more parties. Wonderful. The problem there is it works for Trump again. The more pro-democracy, moderate pro-democracy parties there are or candidates out there in the general election, the better chance Trump doesn't need to get to 50 to win. Biden got the 51 last time. Trump has never gotten over 46.7% of the vote. That means he can't win. And that's both times he ran. He won 46% of the vote in 2016, 46.8 in 2020. He wins, and the race is that close because of third-party candidacies. That's what makes him not have to get 50% of the vote. And particularly when you look at these swing states, obviously, no matter what a third party does out there, whoever the Democratic nominee is, however shallow our bench is, the Democrat's going to win California. Donald Trump is going to win, or the Republican nominee is going to win Alabama and Mississippi and Utah and all those. So there's no way this third party can win the 270 electoral votes, which means all you're doing is siphoning off pro-democracy votes at a time when the pro-democracy vote, if it hangs together, can stop Trump from getting to 50, and we save the democracy and fight another day.
Well, you know, I have two comments. First, I want you to know that Michael Steele was on my podcast and said exactly the same thing you said about the Republican candidates. He gave the exact same answer about why Hogan and these other guys aren't running. So that's very credible. And also, I want to point out that it's my opinion that I'm not sure when Joe Manchin became a Democrat. I think we should call him a Dino, like Trump coined the phrase rhino. I think he's a Dino. I think he's Democrat in name only, but that's a personal opinion. But yeah, you're absolutely right about that stuff. And I just don't, I hope that they don't get any traction on the basis that people are disenchanted with both parties. But let me ask you, are we making a mistake going after some of these prosecutions with Trump? Under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, we can't do this now because Congress won't pass this, but at one point we could have gotten rid of them by invoking a clause that said anybody that causes an insurrection can never run for public office again. Isn't that what we should be concerned about? This man's never going to jail. He's got too much damn money. And he's old. By the time he gets through his appeals, he won't be with us anymore. So are we making a mistake by making him look like a martyr, like he's being persecuted because we're fighting over him paying his girlfriend off? You know,
first of all, his cult will always think he's, you know, being, it's a hoax and it's a and he's a martyr and the whole, you know, the deep state's out to get him. But by his line, they're not trying to stop me, they're trying to stop you, which is such a recycled, how many politicians have ever said that when they were being attacked?
Yeah, right. One of my favorites, Huey Long, goes back, you know.
That's what I mean. It's like it's just, so you know all that you know the downside is already in the already there. I don't think you're going to change any of those minds. On the other hand, I think democracy. I think holding him accountable is very important, and not just him, but a lot of the people around him. Who hopefully will be named or indicted, in the later rounds of indictments. But I think you've got to hold him accountable. And yes, I agree with you. First of all, I don't think there's any chance that any of these trials, in the documents case, it's now been set for May of 2024. That's the trial date to start. And you and I both know that there'll be several delays and motions and things. It'll probably delay it well past May. It's already been pushed to May 2024.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not a ruling, just to start the trial. So, and forget about appeals and everything else. So I agree with you that the likelihood of him being found guilty of, or even, basically a verdict between now and 2024 is, not likely. I do think that there's all kinds of signs that the indictments and the nature of the charges, as people are learning more about them, and they'll learn even more once we know what the indictments actually are, and what the charges are.
Right.
It's clearly not having any impact on the 35 to 40% who are, lockstep. Trump can shoot somebody in Times Square, and they'd still think he had a good reason.
I know.
That group's not going to move. The other 60% of the electorate, there's 10 points of that, could. Is potentially possible to go towards Trump. They're moving away. He is losing, eroding that middle, that group that's like 47-48% are going to vote to stop Trump at all costs. 40% are going to stay with him no matter what. And there's these 10 or 12 points that in the Lincoln Project, we call them the Bannon line, because Steve Bannon in 2016 said, if somebody can figure out how to move just 3 or 4 points of Republicans to the Democrats, we can't get there. Again, that whole argument that Trump would not be able to get to 50. They needed three or four points. If we could pull them away, Trump couldn't win, and that was called the Bannon line. And that's what the Lincoln Project concentrated on, those voters, and pushing them, trying to move them towards Democrats. And in 2020, succeeded at it, along with other people who did a lot of work. But that group is now not 3 points; it's like 12, because of. As people learn more and start to realize what the real, there, no one was worried about democracy dying in 2016. Mm-hmm. Democracy was nowhere near the ballot in 2016. It started to be, people started to see it that way. Didn't really start to see it that way as that kind of a threat until January 6th, 2021. And so as that become clear that it's not just crazy lunatic right-wing fringe, it's that crazy lunatic right-wing fringe is dangerous to the democracy, and dangerous in terms of violence, which I think some people are starting to worry about what happens when they lose, if we defeat them. But my point is that group is now 10 or 12 points. And it's being created because people, as they learn more facts, as the indictments are serious. And I understand what you're saying about the about the hush money case, looking politically motivated, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But that's not the same as you know, basically taking and hiding classified documents. You know, I mean, and then, and it's certainly not the same as any conspiracy you know, the Jack Smith, the three different, it looks like what'll be three indictments in the January 6th case. Those are not having the same effect as the hush money indictment. That indictment, yeah, I think played into what you're saying a lot, gave a lot of people who support Trump the excuse of, you know, they're just going after him. These other two, no. And I don't think Georgia, if that comes in August, is going to be seen that way either. So I think all this points to Trump having big trouble in the general election, whether he's found guilty by then or not. After the election, I think there's no doubt. I don't think there'll be any doubt that he will be found. The verdicts will be, there will be verdicts that go against him in one, if not more, of these cases. And then I don't know what happens then. He's found guilty of a felony or whatever. The good news is he'll never be able to run again. And you may be right. By the time it's actually all the appeals are done, he won't survive to see the final verdict. I still think the final verdict we should go to that. I mean, I don't care if he does die prior to the verdict, you know, prior it goes to the jury or whatever. And I just think it's really important to hold him accountable. I mean, it's the only way we've got to at least dissuade somebody from trying this again.
Well, I agree with you again, and I think most people do agree with you, especially Democrats. And I also agree that the best strategy you could have as a Republican, if you want to help the Republicans win, is to somehow create derision in the Democratic Party, you know, to siphon off Democratic voters. I think that's probably more productive than trying to convince new Republicans. But let me ask you about digital politics for a minute. You know, the new Republican says you're changing the face of politics. And one of the guests that I've had on my podcast is Brittany Kaiser, who I'm sure you remember from the Trump campaign. First she was a Trumper, then she was wanted to rat them all out. Why were we so, and you know what she said many times, and I think she was painfully honest, is that they exploited this because the Democrats were so far behind at it, you know, and they were able to exploit that. Why did the Democrats lag so far behind in digital politics?
We did. When I ran the Dean campaign in 2004, we were light years ahead of everybody and light years ahead of the Republicans for sure. I mean, just way out in front of everybody. What was fascinating to me at the time, I thought, man, we lost, but I thought as the New Republic, you know, basically said we changed everything. We reinvented the way people would campaign into the future. Democrats have we've given the Democrats a great lead as pioneers in this. It turned out that the Democratic Party establishment only learned one thing about the 2004 Dean campaign, and that was that you could raise a lot of money with emails. They didn't get into what we were doing in directly engaging online with our blogs and in other ways that we were interacting and creating ways to connect directly with our supporters. And the Republicans, they didn't need money. They had all these billionaires and millionaires, and the Supreme Court was starting to say, hey, corporations are people too, and dark money's king. And that was, so they focused on the other things that we did, on direct communication, targeting, direct, in a sense, I remember distinctly waking up one morning and realizing in the Dean campaign, we had the Blog for America, where Howard would come on in the morning and he would post something, and 650,000 people were on that blog. A lot of them would make comments or suggest ideas, and I would come on and say, "Hey, Frank, that's a great idea. I'm telling it to Doug right to Howard right now," and we may do that in our speech tonight. And then later on the day, Howard Dean in the speech would actually talk about Frank's idea, and everybody knew that there was a direct connection between them and the campaign, that they actually owned a part of it. The amazing thing was that no one else in the, not Obama, no one in the Democratic Party ever ran a campaign that way. They all did very, and the Obama people were incredible at connecting directly to millions of people and getting them to contribute online. Through the emails and messages, incredible. I think raised $500 million in 2008 over the internet. An amazing thing to have accomplished. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until 2016 when I'm waking up and I'm on Twitter and I realize, damn, Donald Trump. This is his blog for America. Twitter is his blog.
Yeah,
he gets out there and he's saying, you know, do this and do that. Hey, and here comes to my rally tonight. Somebody's saying, saying here's something you should do, and one of his staffers comes on and is telling that person, Trump loves it. Trump loves you. He's your guy, and watch tonight, watch the rally, and then Trump would do it. And it was a direct connection to 17 million people that were following him on Twitter. Not the 650,000 on Dean's Blog for America, but 17. Mm-hmm. On a platform we had to build. We pioneered it. We had to write the code ourselves to create that blog for America. This is, you know, a commercial enterprise,
right,
a platform with millions of people on it, and they're converting it to their blog and having a direct communication and driving. Same thing that would happen. We'd have press that were following our blog, and they'd be following all this stuff, and they'd think it was, here's an amazing story here, and it would you know, be covered on television and argued about. Same thing, but they were driving the entire thing the same way, and it's the only, so the Republicans learned that. I mean, it's very interesting because, again, the dynamic that drove it was money. We didn't, you know, Democrats depend in these, or at the time, and I still think today, depend a lot more on small dollar contributions. And so the pioneering work we did in 2004 was in both veins. One, yes, we raised money online. Two, we really developed pioneering ways to directly connect with our supporters. The Democrats immediately saw the ability to raise money online as the big lesson of the Dean campaign and ran with it. And the Republicans, who didn't need to raise and still don't need to raise a dime online if they don't want to, given the billionaires that are happy to write them dark money checks, and Trump with his scams to probably rake that small dollars and put it in his pocket or his family's pocket somehow, or at least for sure his campaign consultant's pocket. He didn't until they never saw that as the big lesson of the Dean campaign. The big lesson of the Dean campaign was that they went to is what she's talking about, the absolute ability to connect directly with supporters and to grow that support and intensify it and make it be glue between you and them. The Dean campaign had that, and Trump really took it to the next level. And I think DeSantis is trying to do that, but he's horrible. It's the worst campaign I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's a really bad campaigner. And I want to tell you that one of my proudest moments is I used to train people for a group called Indians List. And Governor Dean, during that campaign, came to speak to Indians List. And they gave us both an award, me for being a great trainer and him for being the only presidential candidate that showed up to speak to Native Americans. And it's a beautiful ceremony. Yeah. They wrap you in a big blanket and they tell you how wonderful you are and everything. So that was a very proud moment for me. But we're running out of time here. And I want to ask you a question and I want you to do me a favor. My question is there anything that you want to add that I haven't asked you? And my favor is I want you to tell us how we connect with that Trippy Show, which is your podcast, which I encourage all my listeners to listen to. And how do we connect with that and also with the Lincoln Project?
Well, first of all, I think we've talked about quite a bit. I do think I'd ask people to pay close attention to No Labels and these third party. If somebody's circulating a petition to you saying, hey, could you sign this to put the third party candidate on the ballot? You're essentially, if you sign it, helping Donald Trump get reelected.
Right.
So be aware of what's going on out there. It's really important. Because normally I'd be somebody who would sign something like that. Yeah, sure. Why not let somebody be on the ballot? Sure. But I think it's really the wrong time. In terms of that Trippy Show, you can find it wherever you find any of your favorite podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find that Trippy Show. I'd also highly recommend the Lincoln Project podcast, as well as Rick Wilson, The Enemies List. He's one of the founders of the Lincoln Project, along with Reed Gallen does the Lincoln Project podcast, Rick Wilson's Enemies List, and Joe Trippy's That Trippy Show are all three podcasts that you might want to give a listen to. And you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Trippy.
Well, I hope that people will, and I certainly will. And I want you to know that I've been to 12 consecutive DNC conventions. I'm a super delegate by virtue of my office. And if you're in Chicago, I expect to make that a priority to finally meet you and shake your hand, because I've been hearing about you for years. Like I say, while you were running campaigns, I told you before the show, I was kind of a galley slave. I was one of those guys putting up signs and opening envelopes and doing all that, knocking on doors and things like that. But I really would like to meet you, and I'm really thankful.
I look forward to seeing you in person, Senator, and appreciate all you do every day.
Okay, thank you. And at the end of every show, we dedicate a song to our guests. And tonight, I dedicate one that's been redone by Randy Newman. It was Huey Long's campaign song. Not that Huey was the greatest guy, but I think it's the perfect campaign song. It's called Every Man a King. So this goes out to you, Joe Trippy. Thank you for all you've done for the Democratic Party, and we'll see y'all next week. Go tune into that Trippy Show. All right, thank you.
What? I weep or slumber, America, land of brave and true. There's castles and clothing and food for all. All belongs to you. Every man a king, every man a king, for you can be a millionaire.
Representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.